Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
I actually met my wife on CatholicSingles.com, if you can believe that.
Really?
Yes, I had never done that before. Didn't have any problems with dating.
Natalie and Aaron met on CatholicSingles.com after they realized that they needed to find someone who shared their faith. Meet other faithful Catholics on the original Catholic dating site. Download our app today for free. Looking for a way to build daily prayer discipline? Seen the rise in mindfulness meditation, but not sure if it is possible to meditate in a way that's consistent with your Catholic faith? Just looking for a way to breathe new life into your existing prayer routine? No matter what you're looking for, Hollow is here to help. Hollow is a Catholic prayer and meditation app that helps users deepen their relationship with God through audio-guided contemplative prayer sessions. From meditations on the daily gospel, to the rosary, to daily examines, Hollow has something for everyone. Hollow is the number one Catholic app in the U.S. It is free to download and has permanently free content, but you can also check out all of the premium sessions for 30 days, risk-free, by signing up at www.hollow.app/breadbox.
Everybody, welcome to Beneath the Surface here at WCAP Radio 980 in your dial. Beneath the Surface, where faith and reason meets every Monday evening between 10 and 11 p.m., bringing a little sanity into our age of insanity, a little life into our culture of death. Glad you could join us tonight again. Our topic for this evening, we will delve beneath the surface on the words, "Lead us not into temptation." Lead us not into temptation. Words from the Our Father prayer, and words that relate much to what Christians are going through today in the season of Lent. But before we delve into that beneath the surface, let me introduce to you two people. First, behind the glass, there she is, your producer and mine, Miss Cindy.
Hi, how you doing?
Not bad, Cindy. Yourself?
I'm doing great tonight.
Fabulous, fabulous. I haven't seen you in a while.
Yeah. What have you been up to?
Oh, about 5'11". Ba-dux. No, I've been... I've been busy, you know, busy doing video casts lately, as well as radio shows. But good to see you again. And in front of me is our guest for tonight, Mr. Bob LeBlanc.
Hello, Paul.
Mr. Bobbert.
I am here.
Here you are.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which we means really got that nailed down.
What is that old saying? Something about, if I wish I could remember it. I'm so bad with these things. Something about when you're there you are, something if you're not.
Wherever you are. There you are.
Oh, no. Wherever you go, there you are.
Yeah, wherever you go, there you are.
That
yeah.
is exactly what I was
trying to
remember.
I first heard that on Buckaroo Banzai in the ninth and the half dimension. Yeah. I probably get the dimension wrong, but it's something like that.
Yeah, it's just so simple yet profound. Wherever you go, there you are. Well, you went here.
And here I am.
Here you are, and glad we are for that. 978-454-4980 is our phone number. 978-454-4980 if you would like to get involved in our discussion beneath the surface on the question of lead us not into temptation. Or you can just email us at btsradio980@aol.com or anonymously make a comment at facebook.com/fellowtruthseekers. Or, and we have one more option from now on, and that is, go to my personal website. Actually, it's a Beneath the Surface personal website, paulmorano.com. And that's with a U, like the car, paulmorano.com.
All right, Mr. Bob.
Yes, Paul.
We've got some delving to do here. You got your shovel?
Yes, I do.
Fabulous. Well, as I was saying in the introduction, this topic, lead us not into temptation. First of all, it's gotten a little press in the past 6 months or so. Pope Francis. Yeah, you know, I don't know how serious to take that in a lot of things that supposedly come from his mouth. Or what exactly he meant by it, I don't know the context.
Well, this is a tricky topic.
Yeah,
so.
Something about Jesus or God would not lead us, you know, willfully into temptation. So the words might actually mean something else in a different context, kind of thing.
Yes.
All right. So do you want to talk about first? Do you want to talk about the words first, or do you want to talk about the season that we're in that relates to the words?
Let's talk about the season first, because that'll get. I mean, I don't think we're going to really talk a lot about that. Mm. Let's start off with the three traditional things that we do during Lent.
And what is that?
First of all,
what is Lent, for those who are not Catholic who are listening?
Lent is traditionally it's called 40 days, but it's kind of, if you count the days strictly, you won't come up with exactly 40 days. But it's meant to mimic the 40 days. And the 40 years,
mm-hmm.
the 40 days for Jesus,
he's in the desert.
In the desert,
yeah, before his mission,
and also the 40 years that the Israelites spent in the desert after they were freed from the Egyptians, and they spent 40 years in the desert to prepare to get to the Promised Land.
So the 40 years in the desert, one could say, from a Christian perspective, is fulfilled symbolically in the 40 days in the desert of Jesus. Jesus is the new Israel in that respect.
Right, right, okay. Exactly. And
may I say one more thing about this? The 40 years and the 40 days could also symbolize, or at least correlate with, the 40 weeks of pregnancy.
Oh,
and,
yes.
And so at the end of that preparation time, what happens? A baby is born into the world. Israel is born into the Promised Land after their 40 years, right, in the desert.
Right.
And Jesus is going to be born, if you will, into a new covenant with mankind, sitting at the right hand of the Father. What do you got?
Well, I think for me, at least, you know, I think other people would have different starting points, but for me, the good starting point is the 40 years in the desert, because I get that. To me, that really speaks to me.
How does it speak to you?
Well, you have to remember that the Israelites were slaves of the Egyptians for such a long time. I mean, you could almost say it was bred into them, you know? It really defined their character at the time.
Yeah, I think it was around 400 years, speaking
of four. I think it was maybe 480 years, but you're right. 400, 500 is about that time frame. And so that really gets into a culture or into a people, you know?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
And so, you know.
Well, just to compare it, black people were enslaved for how long in this country?
Well, about the same period of time. 200 years since, 50, what is it?
Well,
so 80 years since the founding of the country, but there certainly was slavery before the foundering, so it would probably maybe was approaching 200 years or something like that, maybe more.
So the Israelites were enslaved perhaps double, at least, the time of the black people in this country were enslaved. So that gives you some kind of perspective of how long the Israelites were enslaved
in Egypt. And you still have people saying, and there is some credibility to this, that black people are still in some way oppressed, because I think the wounds of slavery, collective psyche, it's still with us. I think, and that's something that Abraham Lincoln acknowledged in his second inaugural address, that the wounds of slavery would be felt for a long time afterwards, and I think that's just common sense.
Yeah,
and so going back to the Israelites. They were being really oppressed toward the end there. I mean, Pharaoh was starting to really tightening down the screws on oppression for them. And, you know, this is the time of Moses, and Moses says to Pharaoh, you know, let my people go. And Pharaoh is like, no way. You know, there were 10 plagues and all that sort of stuff. And then finally, Pharaoh relents. He lets them go, and then he decides, he changes his mind even then.
Yeah.
And tries to chase them. And, of course, then you hear the see in the Bible, the parting of the Red Sea.
Yeah.
And that miracle where the Israelites went through without any problem, and then all of a sudden Pharaoh's army gets flooded by the Red Sea.
Yeah, all by the power of God through the arm of Moses.
Right. And so, you know, almost immediately the Israelites are thankful, and then their thankfulness turns into gripes. They start grumbling, you know, and this is... Well, it wasn't so bad under Pharaoh. I mean, why were we here, sent into the desert? Were we sent here to die, you know?
Because they started to get really hungry.
Yes, they started getting hungry. Things weren't going exactly correct, you know?
So the griping and the whining begins.
Right, almost immediately.
What is missing there? Missing is trust, isn't it?
Right. Okay. Absolutely. They've been enslaved, and they get used to that slavery, and here God is going, trust me, you've seen all these miracles, trust me.
Yeah, it's interesting. Fallen human nature is very interesting in a whole slew of things, but one of them is the fact, and I was just pondering this today, one of them is the fact that we tend to choose what is more comfortable than what is better.
Right.
The comfortable rather than the good.
Yes.
And I think this is another example of them saying, you know, we hated slavery, but at least we were used to it. We were comfortable in that misery.
Right. That was the easy choice.
Yeah, it was the easy choice. We were comfortable in our misery. Now we don't know what. We're scared. We're hungry.
We are frightened. Yeah. Absolutely. And I think that brings us into Jesus's 40 days. You know, well, Jesus is...
So 1,200 years later...
Right.
...comes Christ in his 40 days in the desert now...
Right.
...symbolizing and capitulating... The 40 years of Egypt in the desert.
Well, let's go just to a few minutes before he goes into the desert.
Could be found in Matthew chapter 3.
Right.
Go ahead.
And you have first, just before then, you have the baptism of Jesus by John the Baptist.
Mm.
And then you see some remarkable thing that happens then. You have a theophany that occurs at that time.
Yes, which means...
That means, well, here we see specifically the three persons of the Trinity making an appearance during this baptism.
All in this one scene.
In one scene.
Yeah. So you have the Son who is being baptized.
Right.
You have the Holy Spirit in the form of a dove coming upon the Son. Right. And then you have the voice of?
The Father.
Yes.
Who says, "This is my beloved Son." You know?
Yes.
And so you have all the persons of the Trinity here. And I think what's interesting here for Christians, because we consider baptism and confirmation, they're both kind of a sacrament pair. And this is an anointing. Jesus is anointed by the Holy Spirit during the baptism of John.
Yeah, and he's being formed for this mission that he's about to undertake. And it harkens back to a lot of things in the Bible, that scene you just mentioned. But one is the very first verse of the very first chapter of the very first book of the Bible.
Right.
In the beginning, God created heavens and the earth. And then a wind, a ruah from God comes down and begins to form the wasteland. And so there is an allusion to the Holy Spirit, who the same word as wind and breath is spirit.
Right.
So the Spirit of God comes down, and the voice of God, like you hear in the scene, right? The voice of God says, "Let there be,"
light,
and then all of these things come to be. And of course, the word itself of the Father is the Son.
Right.
So there you have all three, much more subtle. You know, it's not as explicit as the scene in where Jesus is baptized, but it's still, in a sense, the formation of the world is occurring with the presence of the three persons of the Trinity. And here you have the very, you know, incarnation of God under that similar situation.
The Word made flesh, the incarnation of God. And the interesting thing and the key thing that happens is it's said in Matthew, and it's also said in Mark, and I think in Mark it's more strongly, but I remember what it says in Matthew. It says the Spirit led Jesus into the desert.
Mm.
And so how were we supposed to think about this? You know, this is a time of trial for Jesus. And I just want to go kind of do a little sidebar here and talk about Lent. What we traditionally with Lent, we have three main things that we do. It's a time of preparation. And
for what?
For the resurrection, for Easter.
Yes.
That is what the whole purpose of everything
gets
into Easter. If there is no resurrection, what we're doing is just a waste of time.
And it goes back to the Jesus in the desert. In a sense, it was a preparation for his death and resurrection.
Crucifixion, resurrection. Yeah, well, the time and darkness that he was spending in the tomb, you know. And we're preparing in Lent. As Christians, we're following Jesus and his 40 days.
Mm.
And so there are three things traditionally that the church tells us to do. One of them is prayer. And Jesus definitely prayed in the desert, so we're following him there. The other is almsgiving. And I'm not sure, maybe you can see the connection here, but usually we're asked during Lent to give alms to show that our love, to make an outward sign of the love that we have for our fellow human beings.
Yeah, and it's a sacrifice.
It is a sacrifice.
Just like the sacrifice of food is, as well as the sacrifice of our time when it comes to prayer.
Right. And the other thing that's explicit there in his time in the desert is that Jesus fasted for 40 days.
I want to talk about that fast and how its implications and what it means for us and why fasting is good for us. 978-454-4980. You're listening to Beneath the Surface, WCAP. Need to take a quick break. We'll be right back after this. Don't go anywhere. We're back. Back OE, 978-454-4980 is our phone number. Beneath the Surface Radio. Thanks for joining us tonight here till 11 p.m. Paul Morano with my guest, Mr. Bob LeBlanc, talking about the topic tonight, Lead Us Not Into Temptation. And mainly we're talking, at least so far, about the time that Jesus spent in the desert, which is, of course, symbolic of what we try to follow as followers of Christ in Lent. And it itself was a capitulation that symbolized the 40 years that the people of Israel are in the desert. Step one, Israel. Step two, the new Israel, which is Jesus. And step three, his extended body, the church. And what I find interesting about many things, but one thing interesting about the temptations of Christ in the desert is the threefold temptations that the devil put upon him.
Let's not pass over this. You've said the word.
Which word is that?
And that's the word in the title. Jesus experienced three temptations of the devil. They're the temptations. This is the title of the show, Lead Us Not Into Temptation.
Right.
I just want to highlight that point. We're going to get back to it later, but I just want to highlight that we are talking about temptations now. We're talking about something that has happened here that's going to relate to the entire topic.
Oh, really? Is that a teaser or something?
That's what it's a teaser.
Cool.
I mean, this is important that
that's
we
exciting.
Remember that Jesus was tempted in the desert.
Now, that is a good point. That the Son of God himself was tempted. It's, you know, they say that Jesus is exactly just like us except for sin.
Right.
And obviously he's also a divine person, but in his human nature he's just like us except for sin. Yet he was tempted, and that's the point here that we're making. The devil tried to get him before he started his mission to save the world. Now, the threefold temptation that the devil gave him related to sensual pleasure. Turn the stones into bread. You'll have bread. He was fasting for 40 days.
He was hungry, hungry after 40 days.
Turn these stones into bread. So sensual pleasure. And then the second one was a view of the holy city. Now, a view of the holy city relates to, you could say, enticement of the eyes. wealth. I could have all of this. And then the third...
You're tempted with some power, he said.
And, well, the third one was you can possess all the kingdoms of the world.
Uh-huh.
And that has to do with possession, right? Power. And then you have the trifold temptations that we're all tempted with, and that is sensual pleasure, wealth, and power. Now, sensual pleasure comes in two. You know, you can cut it in half and say food and sex, right?
Mm-hmm.
So sensual pleasure, wealth, and power. And what Jesus did when he said no to the devil, when he rejected the devil on all three of those temptations, was he made right what Eve and Adam with her made wrong in the book of Genesis. So there was a, if you read Genesis chapter 3, verse 6 very carefully, when Eve was tempted, she noticed that it was, quote, good for food, pleasing to the eyes, and desirable for gaining wisdom. Now think about those three things that she says. Good for food. Again, sensual lust, food, sex, sensual pleasure, right? Pleasing to the eyes, enticements of the eyes, wealth, material goods, and desirable for gaining wisdom. Per se, there's nothing wrong with wisdom, but if you seek to be more wise than God, which of course is literally an impossibility, we're talking again of the sin of arrogance or pride, the wanting power over God himself so that I can live my life the way I want it. There's that trifold temptation that Eve had, that Jesus in the desert, basically Jesus' rejection of the devil and those three sort of overcame what mankind did in their acceptance of those three temptations.
Well, there's also this, I think I'd like to point out, because it relates to modern humanity especially.
Yes.
Is that we really often want to take the easy way out. And that's what the devil was tempting Jesus with. You know, you're hungry? All you have to do is do some of that divine magic and churn the bread into the rocks into bread.
Seems reasonable.
Yes.
On the surface.
And and Jesus was there. He was coming as the Messiah, which the Jewish people recognized as a kingly power. They sort of missed what sort of king Jesus was, but this is the easy way. Instead of all this suffering and stuff like that, come in glory, why don't you?
And this reminds me of when Peter said something like, you're not going to get on a cross and suffer.
Oh, I wanted to bring this up later, but we can bring it up now.
And Jesus said to him what? Get behind me what?
Get behind me, Satan.
That's because Peter was thinking in a very worldly wisdom kind of way, not in a divine, eternal perspective that Jesus had. And you can say the same thing about this.
Well, this really all connects.
Yeah.
So I want to go in first into this idea, especially of fasting, because I think giving something up is something that... That's the more difficult thing to do.
So the sensual pleasures that we're talking about here, sacrificing that is most difficult because it's most essential to us. We need to eat every day.
We need to eat. Yeah. Yes. I mean, there is. You know, our body really complains when we don't have food. You know, I mean,
I know that
it becomes very present to us. And I've noticed it. Look, I've had to change my diet, you know, because of medical conditions, and I've lost a lot of weight, and here I am, and
you're
I'm going
good.
Okay, I've kind of quieted down. I've reached a certain level where I'm used to not eating as much as I used to eat.
And I
intentionally decided I'm going to fast during Lent. And I talked to my doctor, and my doctor said it was all okay for me to do this.
A certain kind of fast, not fully.
Not fully.
Off of all food.
I am fasting at least within the regulations of the church, and I'm doing more than that.
Okay.
For instance, like Fridays, I'll only eat one meal a day and one snack. That is my Friday thing, and I don't increase the one meal. I don't increase. I've already established a level of what my meal is according to what my diet was before. And so I'm not pigging out during that one meal. I am having the one meal that I changed into, you know, after I received all this medical diagnosis and recommendations from the doctor. So,
yes.
And I'm feeling it much more acutely than I have in the past, even though I did sort of the same sort of drastic things during Lent. And maybe I should talk about, well, this is a testing here that's happening. And that's also, I think, one of the acceptable translations for lead us not into temptation. Lead us not into the test, or lead us not into the trial. And I got this from Father Wynendy, who is speaking about Pope Francis and his agreement with the change in translation. And he disagrees a little bit, and the reason why is he goes directly to Jesus' fasting in the desert. So we should understand this fasting and all this sort of stuff as a time of trial that we intentionally put ourselves into.
Okay.
And this is what Jesus did. He was led by the Spirit. He intentionally went into the desert. He went to fast, and he was tempted. He was tried by Satan. And so understanding also this, that this time of fasting, you brought it up before, it relates to the crucifixion and death of Jesus. Jesus carried his cross, so that temptation goes forward to that time that he had to bear that cross. And what has Jesus consistently told his disciples? He's gone, if you wish to follow me, bear your cross, right? He says, carry your cross.
Yeah, carry your cross every day and follow me, yeah.
Right. And so So this is the sort of thing that we should understand. Lead us not into temptation. We should understand this in that sort of same light, that we've all got these sort of daily crosses. And what we're doing, we're spending time in the desert. We're spending time in preparation. Now, we're spending time in preparation in order that we be tested.
So then we have all of those things normally in our lives, and everybody has different crosses.
Right.
We all have our own individual crosses. But in the season of Lent, we actually seek more crosses than we have in our regular lives in order to like a person who trains for the Olympics. They might train normally, but I tell you what, a year before the Olympics, they're probably really, you know, revving it up, right?
Right.
So then Lent is that time to rev it up, so that we can exercise all of those things that we need, so that when we do, or if we do, come to our own great trial like Jesus did at the cross, at his
right.
cross. And I think everybody does come to that, in a sense, at their own individual death, right?
Right.
But all of the sufferings and sacrifices that come before that also can be summed up in all of our, you know, our sacrifice life, if you will.
Right.
So that's kind of like what I'm trying to get at is it's kind of like exercise for the big show.
Right. And you can draw this from St. Paul. He talks about dying to ourselves daily, dying to ourselves. This is the same thing as Jesus telling us to carry our crosses. And if we're not dying to ourselves before we die, Then the real test when we stand before Jesus as the just judge and the merciful judge is going to be maybe not a trial that we pass successfully if we bring it out. And I guess I'd like to go into my prior time in the Navy.
Okay.
I was in a new construction submarine.
Yeah.
And they have trials as the submarine is being built. They have trials, and they're testing the equipment out. And then after Electric Boat said to the Navy, this submarine is yours, they have another trial. And it's a trial, a combined trial of testing out both the submarine and the crew. And it's called a DASO, or DASO stands for, Demonstration and Shakedown Operations.
Mm.
So what you're trying to do is you're trying to prove that this ship of war is ready to go to war.
Okay.
So it is a time of trial to make sure. One thing, you want to kind of get all the kinks out.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? All those sorts of things where you find out maybe a problem with your equipment, or you find out a problem with your crew, and you find out what sort of things that you need to work on and fix.
And so the analogy would be we need to try to get the kinks out of our own spiritual life and our own self and our own virtue, a life of virtue, by purifying us of all of those barriers,
well,
things that get in the way of the grace of God.
Right. And I'm also, right at this present time, I'm doing something called True Devotion to Mary. Okay. I'm going to do the consecration on the Annunciation on the 25th. And part of that, and I'm doing it according to St. Louis de Montfort, and he brings in the Imitation of Christ often in this. And in the first book, in chapter 13, in the Imitation of Christ, Thomas A. Kempis, who's the author of this Imitation of Christ, he starts talking about how temptations try us. They're trials, and then we find out who we are in these temptations.
The kind of character we have.
The kind of character that we have. Mm. And
it's very easy to say, well, if I was in this situation, I'd definitely do this. But you really don't know until you're in the situation.
Yes. Yeah. And here's the thing. I mean, I started seeing that acutely during this Lent. I'm an impatient person, and I thought maybe I had beaten this impatience.
Yeah. You thought you might have beaten it, huh?
I thought I might have beaten it. It's through the grace of God. I thought, hey, I'm praying the rosary all these times. I've done it, and so I remember I was leading a Bible study, and we have time constraints, and here I am. I'm in the middle of Lent.
Yeah.
I'm hungry.
Yes.
And I noticed myself, nobody complained to me, but I just noticed within myself, I saw the interior monster that was there, and I saw, and I was going, wow, I am just so impatient right now. I was very short. Usually, I'm very kind of laid back on this, and people compliment, oh, you let the conversation flow so freely, and stuff like that, and that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's very easy not to be impatient, particularly when you're not, like, living with a wife and five children.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
You can say, I'm such a patient person when nobody's around.
Right. And we'll after the break, we need to speak about what happens today.
Yeah. Good. We'll talk about what happened today with Bob. I also want to talk a little more about the trifold temptations of Christ in the desert and how that relates to us. You are listening to Beneath the Surface here at WCAP. Studios. Paul Morano, Bob LeBlanc, be right back. Don't go away. Back. We are Beneath the Surface. 978-454-4980 if you want to jump in our conversation. Tonight, we're delving beneath the surface on the phrase, lead us not into temptation. And I'm here with my guest, Mr. Bob LeBlanc, and among other things, we have been talking about the season of Lent, the 40 years of the people of Israel in the desert between slavery and the Promised Land, the 40 days of Jesus in the desert in the Gospel of Matthew chapter 3, which is a capitulation of the 40 years in the desert of the people of Israel. And our Lent, which is meant to be an imitation of those two events. One thing, before we get back into what we were talking about before the break, one thing I also want to bring up is we've been talking about the need and the importance of fasting. And the church has always, you know, emphasized that as a sacrifice for us to exercise our spiritual muscles. But we haven't yet talked about the other two.
We haven't.
And I just wanted to mention the enticement of the eyes, or the wealth parts, the temptation to wealth and material beings, things. It has a lot to do with almsgiving, does it not?
No, this, well, I mean, these, the almsgiving is meant to show love. I mean, it's not, it's not meant to be an exterior sort of thing where if I do this, I'll buy my way into heaven.
But
But rather, you do this out of the, out of charity. It's, the word is very appropriate.
I think you, you bring up a huge point there. Both prayer, excuse me, both fasting and almsgiving have a negative and a positive to it. The negative is to not do it. In other words, to not eat a certain amount, certain foods, and to give up the money. But the positive is to give the money to a certain people who need it,
right?
Charity, and to offer your time that and money that you would spend on food to positive works.
Right.
So that's the positive part. You have to sort of get rid of the whatever's in the way of doing what you should be doing in the first place.
Well, this is the whole practice that we're trying to practice is trying to practice love here.
Love.
And maybe I should go into today for me, because
go into today,
because I failed the test today.
You failed.
I failed the test.
Okay.
You know, I thought it was going pretty good. You know, I got a flat tire today. And
hate when that happens.
Yes, and the tire is destroyed. You know, it wasn't something that could be repaired. I actually damaged it by driving on a flat tire. I didn't realize
A smart thing, but okay.
Well, I just didn't know.
I didn't
realize that I was driving on a flat. And, you know, all this, I teach CCD on Monday nights.
Religious education at your
education.
Parish. Yeah.
And that managed to go fairly well, you know. But then I had to work out some sort of way to get here to the show.
Yes.
You know, and so I had to, you know, go to my father and ask him, hey, you know, and he's retired, you know. He's wanting to watch TV.
Yeah, he's probably has his feet up, his shoes off, he's ready, he's watching the Bruins or Celtics game, he's stretching out, you know, grabbing those pretzels, and here comes little Bob coming in. Hey, Dad.
Yes, can you give me a ride to Lowell?
Probably the very last thing you wanted to do.
Right, and just on top of all of that, you know, I'm trying to get... I went and sent an email to the president of my fan club, and we've joked about this before, but this is an actual person that we call the president of my fan club, and I sent her an email.
Yes.
And you know, she was so excited, I'm going to hear Bob on the radio, because of course, she's the president of my fan club.
It's an exciting thing to hear Bob on the radio.
And so she decides she's going to call me.
Okay.
And I am at my wit's end. I've got so many things I've got to do before I leave and get on the road to go to Lowell.
Yeah, who's got this kind of time?
Who's got this kind of time?
For
and
this...
the impatience of Bob really shines forth at this particular moment, and I'm very short with her, and I just tell her I'm stressed out.
Yeah.
And I hurt her. You know, I did not treat her with the full dignity that I should treat a human being.
Mm.
I just started viewing, I was thinking about myself. I was thinking about the show. I was, you know, saying, got to do a great show. And here I am, you know, being tested. Yeah. I've got all these sorts of stressors on me at all at the same time. And do I pass the test? No, I don't pass the test.
No.
You know, so.
What'd you do? Swear at her and hang up?
I didn't. at a certain point, you know, it wasn't very long, maybe 10 seconds into the conversation, she's going, I can hear your stress. I'm hanging up right now, kind of thing.
Okay.
You know?
All right. Gotcha. Well, you know, I don't want to downplay what you're saying, but I think most of us in that situation probably you would have heard the stress too.
Right.
Because but a saint would have been able to handle it better, I would imagine.
Absolutely. Right, absolutely. I would have said, wait a second, this is a real person that I'm dealing with.
Yes.
You know, it's not some sort of abstract thing or anything like that, and I should have dealt with it better. And, you know, I guess I can say I'm only human, but we strive to be perfect.
So in that striving, would you say that fasting and almsgiving helps you to perfect your character in ways like that?
Absolutely, absolutely.
You would,
because
so there's a concrete example. All right.
Right. No, this is exactly it. I mean, I'm hungry. You know, I did eat supper. On non-Fridays and except for Sundays, I will just eat two meals a day.
Okay.
And you know, I'm feeling it. I'm feeling it constantly. And I've lost a lot of weight, and I'm experiencing some pains from losing that weight so quickly.
Okay.
And so
healthy pains or unhealthy pains?
They're healthy pains.
All right, good. Yeah, you're looking a lot better.
Oh, yes, I'm definitely looking a lot better, but
and as the body is shrinking, the beard is growing, and I kind of like that look.
Yes, it's only being a temporary thing, but the thing about it is that, you know, my body is getting used to its new weight,
yeah.
And it's not exactly always smooth at times.
Yeah. You're not totally comfortable in your skin at the moment.
That's true. The skin is kind of flabby, you know?
Yeah, so somebody who comes across in a way that is not to your liking at the moment might hear from you for the stress part of you.
Right, right.
Yes.
It comes out and it has nothing to do with them. And the thing to kind of remember is no matter what you're feeling on the inside, you still need to be able to love the person that you're present with at that time.
Now, that takes practice in virtue.
Right, absolutely. But the thing is that in order to develop this virtue, you have to kind of know where your weaknesses are.
Yes, you have to know yourself, work on them, and that is exactly what Lent is all about, isn't it?
This is exactly what Lent is about. And this brings us to the Letus not into temptation part that we're talking about.
Okay.
So we know that the Spirit led Jesus into the desert and to be tempted. So this this understanding that I received from Father Wynandy talking about this, and he's saying, well, no, wait a second. The translation is correct, but what we need to do is understand the context of this. And he brings up the fasting in the desert, but he also brings up something very interesting here as well. Jesus is tempted when Peter says to him, you know, no, Lord, don't do that.
Yes.
He's doing the same thing
Don't suffer
on that cross.
Right.
Rather, experience the glory that
that
Satan was tempting him with.
Yes.
Experience that glory. Not going through death to get to your glory, but rather just grab the glory without that trial.
Ooh, yeah. It's kind of like what Adam and Eve did in their in their test.
They failed their test.
Because they were going to get the glory from God, but they wanted to grab it for themselves.
But here's something else about Peter, okay? Peter was speaking from his own strength at that time.
That's right.
And also, when he was speaking to Jesus, Jesus says, everybody's going to betray me, you know, after the Last Supper, before the crucifixion. And Peter, what does he do? He denies it. He says, no way. It's not going to happen.
No.
It's not going to happen. I have the strength. I'm going to be loyal to you
to the
very end.
Just what we said earlier. We can say, I will do X in a situation like that, but you really don't know until you're there.
And so
when Peter got there, what did he do?
He denied Jesus three times.
Right. For fear of his own skin.
And here's a great thing that happens as well, is that after the resurrection, Jesus asks Peter three times, do you love me?
Yeah.
And Jesus knows what the answer to this is. The answer to this, yes, Peter does love him. But the thing that he's kind of missed in all of this is that in order for him to survive all these trials, he needs God. And this is the important part of lead us not into temptation, because then we ask right after that line, but deliver us from evil. We're asking God to help us survive all these trials that we're going to. God is not saying avoid all these trials.
Yeah, or that God would take them away from us necessarily.
And in fact, Jesus is praying for that in the garden.
Yeah.
He actually, in his humanity, he has this abhorrence, this fear of death. He doesn't want to go through this death and trial.
Take this cup away from me, but your will be done, not mine, Father.
And that's exactly what we're doing. We don't go into this temptation because the Father wills us, but rather the life we're supposed to lead following the will of the Father.
Yes.
Is one that will lead us into these trials. We need to actually carry those crosses during our lifetime.
In order to gain eternal glory.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And that's sort of the state we're in, a post-Eden state. You need to suffer in order to attain eternal life.
And of course, we unite that suffering with the suffering of Jesus on the cross.
Right, exactly. Which, by the way, brings me to the third temptation of Christ, and that is... possess all the kingdoms of the world and worship me, basically, is what the devil said. And this relates to what Eve said as the third thing, desirable for gaining wisdom. You know, the pretentiousness of life is what St. John said in one of his letters. This pride, this lust for power. And I guess the third thing that you do during Lent relating to that is prayer, because
right.
If you're on your knees, if you humble yourself to pray to God, just the act of doing that says something. It says that God is God and I am not.
Right. This is you said you need to be humble, and that's the first step in prayer. You need to be humble. You need to, and I'm saying if you're not humble, pray anyways. That is just the first move.
Pray for humility.
Pray for humility
if you can.
And I do. I pray for humility daily, and I fail that test daily. And often I pray the litany of humility, and it comes back to me. It always comes back to me. I notice it 5 seconds after I've failed to be humble. And I go, I prayed for this morning. And,
But you're getting there. I guess you can't expect to be there 100%.
Well, that's pride again.
I guess that's pride again.
Expecting, I'll just pray for it, and I'll be humble, and I'll do it without God's help,
But I guess to look at it on the positive side, just the act of praying says something. It says that unlike what Adam and Eve did, and unlike what the devil was trying to do here, you're recognizing the smallness of you, the insignificance of you in relationship to the eternal majesty of God, and how much he loves you despite yourself.
Right. Oh, this is exactly true. I have this quote of St. John Paul II that I always love to bring up, and I'll probably mess it up because it's too long to be pithy, but it's very short.
Right.
And he talks about, you are not the sum of your weaknesses and failures, but rather the Father's love for you and your capacity to be an image of his Son.
Can we break that down a little bit?
Sure, absolutely.
All right. First of all, let's break down what we are not.
Right.
We're not the sum or the summary of our
weaknesses and failures.
Of our weaknesses and failures. Okay. Now, I suppose a lot of people do carry that around as baggage.
Right.
And consciously or unconsciously identify with that continuously.
Right. They say, I'm a bad person.
Yeah.
I can never get better. I can.
And some even say, even God can't love me for what
right.
I've done. Which
that
of course,
true.
Which of course is an impossibility. They
right.
don't know the infinite mercy of God.
And the infinite love of God,
infinite
which are
love
the same,
of God.
Which is the same thing as his mercy.
Yeah. But some people are there. You're right. And so we're not that, he's saying, John Paul.
Right.
That's not our identity.
That is, we are not that.
Yeah.
We are not these evil persons that we may think of ourselves as.
Now speak the positive half of that.
Well, then we are the sum of the Father's love for us. That's the first step, to recognize that God loves us that much. The first part is the recognition that we are weak. But on the other side of that, It's a recognition of God's love for us and our worth contained in that love for us.
I think a lot of people get mixed up of the supernatural and the natural here. In other words, a lot of people would say, I'm a good person.
Yeah.
Now, that's not exactly what you're saying here. You're not necessarily a good person. The badness of you is in a sense, overcome. It remains, but it's overcome by the infinite love that God has for you, right?
Right.
So the point isn't, I'm a good person. The point is, I am fully and completely loved despite the ungoodness of my person. And that makes me good.
Right. And then the other one is the progression that we should be making toward. As Christians, we should be following Christ. And that's how we become an image of the Father's Son.
So, in following the natural Son of God, adopted sons of God, like you, me, and everyone else, have a chance to be caught up in the glory and the eternal life of God to become one of His family.
Absolutely.
And that's what you're talking about. That's what the Christian life is about, and particularly the focus of Lent.
Yes.
Last word?
Well, we look forward to Easter, the resurrection.
Amen to that. All right, one of these days we're going to do a show on the resurrection of mankind as it relates to the resurrection of Christ and Easter. But now we've got to say a quick goodbye. Thank you, Mr. Bob LeBlanc.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. Beneath the Surface, we'll see you next time. Same time, same place. Paul Morano signing off. Take care.
Teachings for an Unbelievable World is a newly discovered work written by St. John Paul II, then Archbishop Karol Wojtyła of Krakow, in the years just after Vatican II. This is the first English language publication of this important work. In this hardcover book that Scott Hahn calls one of the greatest hidden treasures unearthed in our time, 13 brief homilies provide compelling teaching for Catholics in today's post-Christian world and give fresh insights into JP2's pontificate. You can get a copy of this important new book at AveMariaPress.com. Use code JP2Teachings, that's JPII Teachings, to get 20% off your copy today. Looking for exceptional coffee delivered fresh to your door? We have the answer. Our friends at Grim Bean Coffee produce small batch artisan coffee using top tier coffee beans. The coffee is roasted when you order, guaranteeing the freshest coffee possible. Check out Breadbox Roasts, a new line of Catholic themed coffees available at www.grimbeancoffee.com/breadboxmedia. Experience coffee like never before.